You are listening to Concerning New Mexico on KANW. I'm Georgia Armijo. Our speaker is the Cabinet Secretary from the Children, Youth, and Families Department.
So as I mentioned, we have done a lot, but it's not enough. People always ask me when tragedy occurs and I'm on the news, they say, how can you let this happen? It's what keeps me up all the time. Night after night, how can we let this happen to our kids? And I think about it all the time, and I think it's important when asking that question to understand a little bit about how the system works, because some of it is inherent in how the system works. So I'm gonna go through how the system works and the key challenges that we face. This is the protective service system. So overall, we get about 40,000 reports of abuse or neglect called in every year. Of those, 20,000 deal with a parent, guardian, or custodian. So all 40,000 of those get called into us and sent to law enforcement so they can look at them from a criminal perspective. 20,000 we also then look into to see if it involves a parent, guardian, or custodian. We go out and do the investigations, and if we do it well and we do it right, we'll be connecting those families to services, substantiating whether abuse and neglect occurred, and if it rises to the level of custody, working with law enforcement and the courts to have custody of these children. Big misconception, we, CYFD, we don't take custody of children. We have to be given custody of children by law enforcement or by the courts. We, though, then do need to go and prove that those children should remain in our custody. Now, the standard for that, I think, is higher than most of the people in this room would likely think. We have to be able to prove that those children are facing an immediate safety risk, and we have to prove that we did everything in our power to keep, or no, let me restate that. We have to prove that we made reasonable efforts not to take them out of their home. So we have to prove that we tried to keep them with this family or with their family overall. We have to prove those things. We don't get to go into the court and talk about how we felt, what our gut was, that we just felt a bit uncomfortable. We don't get to just focus on risk, that it seemed risky. It has to go beyond that. We have to show that there is an immediate safety risk. I'll give you an example. A worker of mine told me that they were at court and were told by a judge, you don't need to prove to me that dad is on heroin. You need to prove to me that the fact dad is on heroin creates a safety risk, because we have a lot of functioning heroin users in New Mexico. So it is a high standard. Of those 20,000 every year, about 1,300 come into our custody. That means there's about 19,000 other little fires out there that are terrifying to me, to my workers. At any moment, one of those could turn into another story. Now, once they're in our custody, then per federal law, per the way things work, then most of them are going to have a reunification plan, which means it's our job to work with the family to get them to a place where that child can go back to that family. This isn't because CYFD just wants to give everyone back. That's not what it is. It's because research and outcomes and the federal law will show that people have better outcomes when they are with their family. So we work to reunify. Now, not in every case. So we have to be good, and we have to be strong, and we have to look at if true change has occurred with these families. But we don't make that decision in isolation. We go to court. In the courtroom is CYFD. There are also attorneys for each of the parents. Someone told me, well, you guys just tell the judges what to do, don't you? I'm like, whoa, no. Absolutely not. We put forth our belief, and then we have to defend it against, again, an attorney for each of the parents, and then hopefully a CASA in the room as well, advocating for the child, or a guardian ad litem advocating for the child. So there are a lot of people that weigh in. So again, if a child goes home or doesn't go home, that's not a CYFD decision. It's a whole system decision. So of those cases and the 1,300 that come in, about less than half end up going towards adoption, and a little more than half usually end up going towards reunification. So that gives you the whole kind of just funnel of what happens and how it works. And I think dispels some misconceptions about the power that CYFD does and doesn't have. So what are the big challenges? One, the same laws apply to the good guys and the bad guys. I think about this all the time because people say you need to change the laws. You need to make it easier to take kids into custody. That sounds really good to me sometimes. But what that means is we will now be making it harder for parents. We will be getting rid of parental rights. We will be lessening parental rights, and that's a scary place to go if you are a good parent. People have said there was legislation that was pushed a few years ago that if CYFD responds and the child has a bruise, that child should be taken into custody. Makes perfect sense for some of the high-profile cases we've seen. I will tell you that I have three little boys, and they have a lot of bruises. And if someone got angry at me and called CYFD, and all that it took was CYFD responding and finding a bruise and going into custody, it would destroy us as a community and as parents. So you can't make that simple law. Another person recently said there should be a law where if you have a certain number of referrals, that child automatically comes into custody. So if you've been called 10 times, that child should come into custody. Again, makes perfect sense, given one horrible case. But what if you have a divorce situation, and mom and dad decide that the best way to wage war on each other is just to call CYFD over and over and over and over? Now, because they would know all they need to do is call this certain number of times, and we will take that child away from their parent. So you can't do that law either. So every time someone says there is a simple law fix, question it. Because, and remember, the same laws apply to the good guys and the bad guys. And that's what makes it difficult. Now, we've pushed legislation that would increase penalties for child abuse, and we've pushed it every single year that I have been in this job, and we have not gotten it to go anywhere. That would be a law that wouldn't be the same for the good guys and the bad guys. That's one that would actually impact those who have been proven to hurt our children. So that's a big issue. Same laws apply, so what do we do? I'm not just going to give you the excuses. I'm going to tell you what we're doing about it. So what I need is my staff to better be able to delineate what's going on in this home by having more staff, as we mentioned, but also by equipping them with better tools. And one of the things I'm most excited about moving forward is that we're partnering with the National Commission on Crime and Delinquency for an evidence-based tool that all of our workers will be using, that the courts and law enforcement will be aware of, that uses predictive analytics to make better decisions in that house. So to use not just what they're seeing in that moment, but tons of data and predictive analytics to help them decide, is this child going to be safe in this home or not? How do we make a better decision? Using better training, which we're working on, having more workers, and then having an evidence-based tool that they can use. Now, it's not a tool that tells them what to do, but it's a tool that will assist them in their decision-making and get rid of some of the subjective nature that is applied when they go out and respond. I go out with workers all around the state, kind of like undercover. It's amazing to watch how different their decision-making process is based on their own history, based on what they grew up with. And we want to get rid of some of that. We want more consistent decisions being made around the state. Now, another huge challenge that we face is that it's a system. It's not just us. We don't just get to decide how to change it and then make it operate that way. We have the judiciary, we have law enforcement, we have the schools, we have providers. It's a big system, and we have to get that system working better together. We rolled out a program with APS, with the school districts all around the state. We did better training to let them know about signs of abuse, what to do when they call, and if we don't respond, to call again. We gave them posters to hang up, and we gave them how-to reporting sheets. Since we did that, we've seen an over 200 call increase from schools around the state. We've reached out to law enforcement and created a law enforcement portal so that law enforcement could have access to our CYFD files. So they, when they respond, can know what the history was that this family had. They can do it even from their cars. They can now access our files and our data. We've had over 230 law enforcement officials already access the site, and I know for APD alone, they've accessed it over 8,900 times. So we are equipping law enforcement with better information so they can make better decisions, and again, the system overall can work better together. Another part of the system is that it's completely dependent on human behavior. And I have 2,000 state employees that have to be perfect. When I look at our numbers, if we're doing something at a 98% rate, and I think that's good, I have to think about the fact that that 2% is not just a number, it represents a child or multiple children. So one thing going wrong is not acceptable. So I need 2,000 state employees to be perfect at all times in their decision making. And it's pretty hard to fire anybody. It's hard to change the culture and it's hard to fire people. I'll tell you that we are working on that accountability piece. We're working on it a lot, but it is a true limitation when you talk about how easy it might be to change a culture. We fired someone, I can't say ever names, but we fired someone because they refused to participate in a protective service investigation themselves. Protective service worker refuses to participate in a protective service investigation, which I forgot to mention earlier. All CYFD investigations are completely voluntary. No one has to do anything we ask of them. They don't even have to talk to us, and if we tell them to go get a service, they don't have to get that service. So one of our workers, knowing that, because they work for us, refused to participate. We fired them, and we were forced by a judge to bring them back and have them continue to work for us. So it's difficult. We're up against challenges there. But that's why, again, we have to, one, make that our operating principle. We have to get better with regards to employee evaluations. We have to be clear with what standard we are setting. And then we do have to hold people accountable, even when it's painful, when they don't meet that standard. And then finally, and connected to that, the hardest part of this system is not just internally is it all made up of humans, but every single part of it is made up of humans. Every part of it. Foster parents, children, providers, it's all humans. I've worked in other industries before where we have found ways that machines can come in and get rid of the chance of human error. This is not a system like that. It really is all about humans, and humans are flawed. Myself included, all of us. We're flawed. We're not perfect. We break. We have bad days. It's not a system that is set up to allow for bad days. But I will tell you that the beautiful other way to look at that is that it's a system all made up of humans. And the magic comes from humans. And the most beautiful things that I've seen in this job come because of humans. And because of humans that go above and beyond what any machine would ever do, or what any system that was created to get rid of human error would do. So it's our greatest weakness and our greatest strength as a system, is that we are all, it's all about humans. So now, that's enough emotional stuff for this room. I want to give you some numbers and then I'll close. Number one is 53. This weekend, I got a text from Senator Gould saying 53. That's the number of graduation gifts we needed to get for our foster kids this year. She said 3 years ago, that number was 13. 262. That's the number of incarcerated juvenile justice youth who have graduated since 2014. Or gotten their GEDs. Many of these kids, when they're incarcerated with us, they have no credits. They haven't gone to school since eighth grade. 262 of them either have their GED or diploma, something that no one can take away from them. 79 million. That's what we have grown the CYFD budget over the last 3 years, both general fund and from federal funds. So people always say you don't have the resources, and they're right that resources are something we have to continue to grow, but we have grown the budget by $79 million. The vast majority of that going to prevention programming, also going to strengthen what I talked about in terms of our protective service areas. Now, does that mean we're just overflowing with money? No. Unfortunately, the need continues to grow as well. But it shows we as a state are making this a priority. Our governor and our legislature have made this a priority, and we have grown it by $79 million. We're over a $500 million budget now. We talked about prevention programming and child care assistance. My next number is 4,000. We have 4,000 more children participating in child care assistance now than we did 3 years ago. That's 4,000 more children whose parents make less than 150% of the federal poverty level that are now someplace safe for the majority of the time, and their parents are going to work or school. 2,000 of them are in high-quality centers. So now we're also, with those 2,000, working to close the achievement gap. We're getting them ready for kindergarten. We're getting them, probably all of those 4,000 are going to be in a better shape, but these ones are actually in what we consider high-quality centers, which means that we can prove that they are actually going to start to reduce that achievement gap that some of them are facing. So our most vulnerable kids are getting to be someplace safe, and they're learning and getting prepared for kindergarten. 20 million, it's my next number, 20 million is what we received this year from the legislature to start a children's wellness center here in Albuquerque. So to purchase and renovate a building so that our staff has a place that they can feel proud to go to every day, and more importantly, so that our children, when they come into custody and when they're working to reunify, can have a space that will work to decrease the trauma that they've experienced. Now, 20 million sounded like a big number to me, as those of you in the construction business know here. It goes really, really quick, but it's a great start. We are going to be on a path to have a world-class space for our workers and, again, more importantly, for our kids. And my hope is the next administration continues to push it so we can realize the full vision of what a children's wellness center will look like. And then finally, 2,611. It's the number of kids that we have in custody. That's the number of children who belong to all of us. They're literally in the custody of the state. These are our children. They represent, unfortunately, many more. Many who have been in the system and are now working hard to get on their feet. Since Ezra is here, and for this room, I want to mention that Ezra led an initiative to get it so we have tax credits for those of you who are going to be willing to hire our foster youth. You now can get a $1,000 tax credit. These are our children. Think about what you can do to help these children. So I'll close by asking you for three things. Be involved. If you can be a foster parent, oh, God bless you, and please do it. People often say, take kids, you need to take more kids. And I think, where do you think those kids go if we take them? Can you imagine if we took all 20,000 kids that we got a referral on? Where would they go? So please, if you are in a position to be a foster parent, absolutely look into it. Follow through on that. It will be heartbreaking and it will be rewarding. If you are not, help someone who is. Make us backpacks for our kids, comfort backpacks. You can go on pulltogether.org and it has a list of places and ways that you can be involved. So be involved. Two, be brave. When I took this job from tourism, the quote that guided me was, choose courage over comfort. And I think we have to have more people that are willing to do that. And they're willing to do the hard stuff. And it's hard and it's ugly and it's messy. But it's what's going to be what turns this state around. And then finally, I would ask, be kind. Of everything that I've seen in juvenile justice, protective services, behavioral health, I will tell you that the heart of every single issue is a desire for human connection. So be the person that creates that connection. People will go to all sorts of extremes to find it in unhealthy ways if we don't create it. So please be kind. Find ways to be kind when you feel like being mean and nasty. And again, I'm telling you, I'm not perfect at this, but think, how can I be kind? And be kind. So thank you again so much.
Couple of questions. I know we're running.
Thank you for an exceptional presentation. As a federal candidate, I'm actually kind of curious because one of the things that's come to life is that evidence-based voluntary at-home, you know, visitation programs operated through NGOs and now supported by the state agency are showing tremendous success. But from a federal perspective,
think that, first, so much of what you said is important and gets ignored, which is evidence-based programs are showing results. Often what happens is we have a lot of programs here that are not evidence-based, but that claim that same kind of benefit. And so I'd say always just be cautious and wary. Like home visiting is the example where people say home visiting delivers this. Certain home visiting programs deliver, certain do not. So ask those kinds of critical questions to make sure that we're continually pushing people to deliver in the areas that will give us outcomes and the results that we're looking for. I think I also hear often that, New Mexico is unique. So I think from a federal perspective, what we do is look at what is working, where funding is going, and then really how can we apply that in New Mexico and in our state where we might not have as many evidence-based programs because it takes a different, oftentimes, level of education that we have trouble filling those jobs. So step back and I would say really look at that. Nurse home visiting programs do well and we don't have enough nurses here always. So then, you know, kind of step it one step back too to understand why when we're not delivering evidence-based programs, we aren't.
Lynn.
Monique, you're such a rock star and you've done such amazing things with this program and with tourism, obviously. You've got a change coming up, and do you think these things can be passed to the next hands if they are idiots who don't give you?
Here's what I believe, and it's what I said the whole time I was at tourism, and it's what I said is that if we do good work, people would be crazy to reverse course. I have made it my goal to get out to my offices around the state prior to leaving this position, and what I've told them is that those 2,000 people, they're the strength, and as strong as they are is as strong as the agency will be, regardless of who comes in at cabinet secretary. This agency is full of issues. And again, a new cabinet secretary would be crazy to change anything that's working because there's plenty that they can work on without doing that. But I really think it's about building up the strength of my employees right now. And that's been my focus so that they know those operating principles. They know what we're supposed to be working on. And they will have, again, that strength to speak to the next secretary and the next administration that comes in and push on what is working. And that's where the outcomes also matter and we have the numbers to show it. So I think that it's really, that's been a big priority for me is to get my staff on board and in a place where they can push it.
You have been listening to Concerning New Mexico. The speaker has been Monique Jacobson, Cabinet Secretary for the New Mexico Children, Youth, and Family Department. The speech was recorded at the Albuquerque Economic Forum.
You've been listening to Concerning New Mexico with Georgia Armijo on 89.1 KANW, New Mexico Public Radio.